This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is a company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 111 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, everybody? We're joined today, Australian gold medalist Stephen Bradbury.
I can't wait, man. He was Australia's first Olympic gold medalist in the Winter Games. When he actually won it, I think it was 2003 by memory. So I was still pretty much a young kid. I was about 20 years old. So he's a huge inspiration and a guy that... It just really shows, never give up.
Yeah, man, this guy is a perfect example of creating an opportunity for himself and then harnessing that and taking advantage of the opportunity. And he finished on top, so it's going to be exciting to hear his perspective of the whole doing a Bradbury. And an awesome opportunity for you guys listening to hear some advice and some insight to one of the best in the world at what he does.
If you haven't yet, guys, especially maybe for our overseas listeners, probably best thing to do, maybe check out YouTube. Just quickly type in Stephen Bradbury, and you'll have a look at the semi-final and the final from the speed skating that year in 2003. And you'll see the actual marvelous tactics that Stephen used to win the Olympic gold medal. And it's quite incredible. If you haven't yet, just quickly pause this for one moment and check that out for 2 minutes and then come back to the show. Definitely, it is worth it.
It'll definitely give you a better understanding of who we're talking with, who are you listening to, and the whole story about what he's gone through, what he achieved, and what he's doing now. So we really appreciate you guys tuning into this episode, all the other episodes, and continually to support the Vision Board.
Definitely, guys. So please subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Please leave us a 5-star review. The best thing you can do for us, like Johnny said, is just tell your family and friends, share the message, and spread the word, and we'll keep bringing Olympic gold medalists, billionaires like Ryan Blair, and Laird Hamilton's coming on next week. So it's only the best of the best, guys. So we'll just keep producing. But to keep producing, we just need a little bit of support, which we really appreciate the people who have already.
Let's do this, guys. We got it. Let's do it.
All right. Can't wait. Stephen Bradbury. All right, guys, our special guest is Stephen Bradbury. Stephen is Australia's first winner Olympic gold medalist with gold in the 1,000 metres at Salt Lake City Games. He's a 4-time Olympian, and he also has an Order of Australia medal for services to Australian sport. We welcome Stephen Bradbury. Stephen, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. Stephen, thanks for stopping by the Vision Board. Like we mentioned off air, the 15th anniversary of your gold medal just passed. Could you share with our fans and your fans alike currently what 2017 is offering, and you know what's kind of going on in the life of Stephen Bradbury?
Yeah, it's crazy the amount of social media traction that something that happened 15 years ago has received over the last couple of days. It was one of those events that a lot of people in Australia remember where they were and what they were doing when the term "doing a Bradbury" was born. And for me, it feels like a lifetime ago. Now, these days, I've carved out a niche for myself in what I call corporate land, doing motivational MC and these days even a bit of stand-up comedy in the corporate world. And I wish that I could still say that I was getting the adrenaline and the buzz from competing at the Olympic Games, but unfortunately I'm a bit old and a bit unfit to do that nowadays.
Well, for everything to happen, you know the victory that you took out, I think people forget that you actually went to four games. Can you take us back to the start and actually how you got into the sport?
Well, we all have a bit of background, don't we? You guys have probably improved a fair bit since you did your first podcast, I would imagine.
Oh, that first one was terrible.
We actually hid them from our fans, so you could only listen to up to, I think, 15.
Hell, no one's good at anything the first time they do it, are they?
That's right.
For me, it was speed skating was something that I started when I was 8. My dad was the national champion back in the 60s, and for him it was more of a regular hobby. And for me, when I hit my teenage years, I got to experience the sport on an international level, and I saw this Japanese guy by the name of Kawasaki, who went around the outside of three other skaters in the World Championships in the final of 1,000 metres, and he broke the world record. And I was the reserve on the Australian team at 15, and I was sitting there on the grandstand watching, and I thought, I want to do that.
Yeah. How many days a week at that time were you training?
Training basically consisted of 2.5 hours morning and afternoon, 6 days a week. So 5 hours a day, 6 days a week for about 14 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah, and was it a repetitive thing? Was it weights in the morning, a bit of cardio on the arvo, and then skills, obviously? What happened there?
Yeah, speed skating's got a fair bit of variety in it, although some of that these days has gone out of it. The training methods and the science that have come in have meant that the skaters do a lot more time on the ice and a lot less time pushing weights in the gym or riding their bike or doing imitations on the land as compared to what I used to do. But, yeah, mate, the variety of the sport was okay. A lot of time in the pre-season out on your bike getting the base fitness in, because it's such a high-intensity anaerobic sport, you have to have that base fitness before you can start punishing your body with high intensity, otherwise it breaks down too quick.
Stephen, how did your father, you mentioned your father was a medaled, you know, prize speed skater as well. How did he get involved into the sport when he was younger?
It was more of a social activity back in those days, boys, before the internet and video games and that sort of thing. And from what I've been told, it was a place, the skating rink was a place you went to on a Saturday night to pick up a chick.
Yeah.
And that was where my mum and dad met. So there was therefore a lot more spin-off into the ice sports, ice hockey, figure skating, speed skating, because a lot of people already knew how to ice skate.
You mentioned right in the beginning doing a Bradbury. So me coming from America and knowing of who you were with the winning, I was telling people we were having you on, and my Australian friends were telling me about, you know, asking about doing a Bradbury. And I was hearing from five different people, five different explanations of what that means. So I want, since I got you here, what is that? What is doing a Bradbury out of the mouth of Stephen Bradbury?
Well, you could. It was put into the Macquarie Dictionary in 2014. So, in short, doing a Bradbury means a lucky victory.
Yeah, do you, the whole luck thing, man? You put yourself in that opportunity. You created that for yourself. So, do you believe that it was luck?
Well, there was most definitely an element of luck in there. I mean, I'm probably the luckiest Olympic gold medalist in history. But it doesn't change the fact that I had to work my ass off for 12 years to put myself in position to have things go wrong for my competitors and for me to be there to take that opportunity. It wasn't anybody else that was there. It was me, and it took a lot of hard work to put myself in that position. And I think that's a good lesson for anybody who's trying to succeed in anything. You don't necessarily have to be the best in the world, but you might be the best in the world on your particular day if you stick it out long enough.
Yeah. Actually, talk about that path, because, you know, people just, like I said at the top of the show, don't realise that you went to four games. The fact of the matter is, you know, you, like you said, you took your opportunity to actually win when the opportunity came. But can you just talk about the mindset of having to go through that 12 years to actually achieve it? Like, how did you feel once you actually did become the Olympic gold medalist?
Yeah, it was certainly a long road, man, and the ups and downs along the way. When I look at the whole thing as 12, 14 years of hard work, I wonder how and why I did it all, because when you haven't done what you can do, for me, in previous Olympics that I'd skated, I was number one in the world 8 years before in the 1,000-metre event, the favourite to win, and I got knocked over. And then 4 years earlier, I was ranked fifth in the world, and I got food poisoning 2 days before the event, and I just didn't have any energy, and I finished 16th or 17th or something. I didn't really look. And as it turned out, when I was 2 or 3 years past my best skating ability, I had a bunch of guys fall over in front of me, and I wound up with a gold medal around my neck, and initially I wasn't sure if I wanted it in that way. But after having a few minutes to think about it, I decided that I would accept it, not for the 90 seconds of the race, but for the 12 years in the lead up.
Was it true that before that race, I read a story that your coach was preparing you to actually have a game plan of kind of like hanging out in the middle of the pack and playing the waiting? Was that true?
I wouldn't say middle. I'd say back.
The back.
I was playing the fence for you. Come on, Steven.
No, well, that was our plan for the semifinals and the final. I'd skated as well as I possibly could in the quarterfinals. Beat a four-time world champion from Canada and made it through to the semifinals. And you know, from there, I kind of had some experience and judgment on my side, and being that I'd been around the sport for so long, I knew that I wasn't as strong as the other skaters, and the best chance that I had to get through to the final was to stay out of the way in the semi-final. And as it turned out, I had some better legs under me than I'd realised, and it came down to the final lap in the semi-final, and I hadn't made a move, and I had a little bit of gas left in the tank, as you Americans would call it, I hadn't used this, and was kind of kicking myself, but on the last corner, three of the four guys in front of me fell over, and I wound up second in the semi-finals. The guy who won it got disqualified, so I won the semi-final, and having to race four races in an hour and a half, being the oldest skater, not just in the final, in the entire Olympic field, and having a bit of experience and judgment on my side, I just knew that I didn't have the lactic acid tolerance to back up four times in an hour and a half anymore.
Yeah.
So there was absolutely no point in me trying to mix it up with Apollo Arno and Zhai Jun Li and Han Suan and Matthew Turcotte in that Olympic final. So there was no reason to change the tactics, stay out of the way, and hope they make a mistake.
Yeah, but what was your reaction like when your coach first came to you? Did you think he was crazy, and then you just walked away and said, "Well, this is a pretty good idea"? Like, what was that?
Well, he's a she, little Chinese she, lady. Apologies. Her name's Ian Zhang. She's been an Australian citizen for many years now and coached me in my career, and I actually had the draw list for the semi-finals and the final, and when I looked at the semi-finals list, I thought to myself, I don't think I can beat any of those blokes, and that's what I said to her, and she agreed with me. So we employed a tactic that I never would have imagined that I would have taken on earlier in my career, because it was just something that didn't factor in, but under those circumstances, it was the only chance that I had to try and get an Olympic medal. And prior to the final, a lot of people, teammates and opposition and other people that were coming in the change room to throw in their two bobs worth at me, they all said the same thing. Everyone just said, "Steve, just go out there and stay out of the way, and you're going to pick up a medal out of this for sure."
Interesting. Wow. Steve, do you believe in fate?
Is that asking that question?
No, it's a little bit different to lucky. Because do you think that even though as good as you were at speed skating, that you know all the stuff that you do now, motivational speaking, like had you not won that gold medal, I guess you wouldn't have been in the same position now. Do you believe that maybe that as good as you were as a skater, maybe you're a better speaker?
Well, it's the only thing I can honestly say that I'm a dead set expert at these days is getting on stage and firing up a crowd and getting a standing ovation at most conferences that I speak at. And you know, I enjoy that adrenaline kick that comes along with that. If you'd like to have a look at some of my promo vids and stuff, have a look at Steven Bradbury.
Yeah, I checked it out yesterday. It was good.
A lot of energy.
I enjoy that. And you know, I wish I could still be an Olympic speed skater. But you know, going back to your question of fate, Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it? And if you had asked me before I'd won the Olympic gold if I believed in, I prefer to call it karma rather than fate.
Mm-hmm.
If I believed in that, I probably would have said no because I felt like I'd been screwed in previous Olympics when I was the favourite to win and got knocked down 8 years earlier. But afterwards, after having time to reflect, do I believe in karma? I think I do a little bit, you know, and
yeah, it almost sounds.
If you're able to, you know, the old saying to do to others as you'd like done to yourself, and be good to people and help people, then eventually that will come back around in your favor.
Yeah, you mentioned you fell the 8 years earlier when you were the favorite, and then when this happened and you ended up winning the gold. I was talking to Tristan before we went on the air. It almost sounds like that was like your moment of like culmination, everything coming. You know, full circle, your body of work. So the average person sees that, and like you said, they say call, doing a Bradbury, but and it was lucky. But from a perspective of mine that really doesn't know much about the sport before I started researching it, it sounds to me that you wouldn't even have been on the ice though that time if you wouldn't have gone, you know, that path, that body of work that led you to the moment to get the gold medal. So how many times did you want to quit before that? Like, were there ever times that you knew you were an aging skater and you didn't have the speed? And before that Olympics, was there a time where you talked to your coach and said, you know what, I might not, you know, we should probably just hang him up?
Yeah, that was probably the defining moment for me. It was 20 months before the gold medal. I had a crash in training in Brisbane and it was a low speed crash. I went over the top of another skater head first into the barrier and I broke my neck, fractured the C4 and C5, and I had to have one of those halo braces screwed into my skull. I don't know if you've ever seen somebody wearing one of those things, but you pretty much resemble a human building site.
Yeah.
So I had to wear one of those for 2.5 months, and I had all of that time to think about the big picture, think about whether I was going to skate anymore or not, and that was an easy decision. That happened very quickly, but the doctor who screwed the halo brace into my skull, he told me that I'd never skate again, so I just went to another doctor. Because I had a lot of unfinished business to take care of, and even though it probably wasn't going to be an Olympic gold medal or any coloured medal anymore, I decided that I had to have one last shot. And I only had 18 months to go after they removed the halo brace off my head, and 18 months of hard work out of 14 years is not that much. So in my head, I had no choice, and I just wanted to go to the fourth and final Olympics and actually skate my best when the whole body world was watching me.
Has there been another Australian to win, to even medal in the winter sports since you?
In the Winter Olympics? Well, yeah, Australia has 12
I think.
Winter Olympic medals under its belt now, and 5 of those are gold.
And you were the first?
Myself and Kieran Hansen, Andrew Murther, and Richard Nizelski. We won Australia's first Winter Olympics medal. That was a bronze in the 5,000 metres relay.
Yeah.
That was in Lillehammer Olympics. That was 8 years before I got the gold also. So that was our first medal, and then I got the first gold.
Yeah. What's your involvement in the sports these days, Steve?
Mate, I'm on the board with the Olympic Winter Institute, Board of Directors. We look after the 8 Winter Olympic program sports that Australia runs, and we've got some very realistic gold medal contenders for the Pyeongchang Olympics, which start pretty much a year from today in South Korea. So look, very much looking forward to that.
With your sport being such high speed, I come from a baseball background, and a lot of our injuries are very common, shoulder injuries, rotator cuff, elbow, that sort of thing, the joint, throwing the ball. Could you share some insight with our listeners at home? Some of those, you mentioned the C4, the crash to your, you know, to your neck just in a low, in training. Are those common in your sport? And if not, what are some of the common injuries?
Yeah, well, you're topping out at about 54 kilometres an hour, which I think in miles is about 35 miles an hour. So when you hit the barrier doing that sort of speed, it's kind of like being in a car crash. And as a speed skater, you crash every couple of weeks, and it's low impact, so you don't, the smoother you are, the faster you are on the ice, so you don't really get the pounding injuries like knees or, you know, shoulders if you're throwing all the time because it's so smooth. But, you know, you've got 18-inch sharpened steel blades doing 50 kilometres an hour, and when skaters fall over together, those things are flying through the air. So these days they have Kevlar-lined skin suits, which prevent some of the slicing injuries from another blade. But, yeah, there's some pretty serious cuts that happen. I landed on the back of another skater's blade in the early 90s that went clean through my right leg. A person of my size, I've got 5.5 litres of blood, and I lost 4 of them in 1 minute.
Wow.
That was a serious life and death situation, and the Canadian speed skating team doctor happened in Montreal. He stuck his hand inside my leg, and he, with his thumb and forefinger, and squeezed on the femoral vein to try and stop the blood from spurting about 3 metres across the rink. And, that guy pretty much saved my life. But those sort of accidents are few and far between. But, yeah, when there's an injury in speed skating, it's usually a pretty good one.
Yeah, I had a friend who in Southern California who was a professional street skater downhill slalom. So, like, these mini boards that look like skateboards. And he did this for...
Oh, yeah, like the street luge.
Yeah, and he's in his early 50s now, so he was doing this in the 70s, like Lords of Dogtown type thing. But
no helmets.
Yeah, nothing. And high speeds. And the question is,
did he have a mullet haircut as well?
he was rocking the mullet, the short shorts. He was probably listening to the, I don't know, what other, maybe the Beach Boys? They were from Manhattan Beach. But would he...
Maybe Whitesnake.
Yeah. dude, hair 80s hair bands. I could go on a tangent right now. but
I'd be there with you.
Yeah. But he ended up developing vertigo after he was done skating. It's one of the reasons he had to quit, because that speed ended up affecting his equilibrium, like when he wasn't skating. So was there does this happen in your sport? Did this ever happen to you?
That's what he's putting it down to, is it? The speed affected his equilibrium. You sure it wasn't something else that he was doing?
Yeah, that's what he said. You know what? Potentially, I guess. Potentially. Are there any dangers of, you know, the body moving at that high rate for long periods of time?
No, I mean, you know, being a speed skater, back in my day, you needed to be really strong. So, you know, probably a bit of the leftovers that some of us have is some sore lower backs from being able to squat 250 kilograms and leg press 650 kilograms. But the speed, you know, doing 50 kilometres an hour is, whilst it's the fastest self-propelled sport in the world, meaning no engine and no gravity, I don't think you have any vertigo issues like a Formula One driver might have.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Actually, with just going back to, you know, injuries and overcoming adversity, we speak a lot to successful people about their inner circle and the people in their lives that help them actually, you know, achieve their own greatness. You know, we spoke about your father, but before, can you give us insights into other people in your inner circle and the things that they were doing for you?
Yeah, well, you know, to succeed in today's world is virtually impossible to do it by yourself. I mean, the 21st century demands you be an expert in something, and most people can only make that one thing. During my skating career, I had my coach, my teammates, my physio, my equipment manager, and my parents. They were the main people within my expert team, and if I was still a speed skater today, I'd need a way bigger team if I wanted to have a chance to get to the top. But I think it's around being able to hunt for the right people that can help you with those little one percenters, because in any business or sport, there's a lot of people that are good at it, and it's only those one percenters that separate you from the competition. And if you're not out there looking for them, it's very rare that they're going to come along and smack you in the face. And nowadays, when I'm trying to improve what I do on stage, you know, I work with a comedian and a professional speech writer and try and hone the entertainment and motivational sides of my show, so I can continue to be an expert at what I do. And there's a lesson in there for anyone who's doing anything. If you kind of put all your eggs into one basket and get right down to the nitty gritty and start to enjoy those one percenters, and you get a bit of adrenaline rolling around in your stomach with what you do too, and doesn't feel like work so much anymore.
Yeah, sticking to the stage. So, do you have advice to somebody? Does public speaking come easy to you? Was this something that you just started doing, or are you nervous every time you get up there?
I'm not really nervous anymore. I'm closing in on 1,000 gigs in 18 countries nowadays. So,
wow, that's amazing.
A bit of experience under my belt. But
so, could you give us a little bit of maybe somebody listening at home who wants to maybe take that leap and start speaking in front of large groups? What would some advice you would give?
Yeah, well, when I first got asked to do my first presentation, I had an agent at that point, and I couldn't even believe that I had an agent. I was a speed skater from Brisbane, you know, what the hell do I need an agent for? And, so Robbie's name was, he calls me up and he says, Steve, they've asked you to come and speak at the annual Retrovision conference in Adelaide. Retrovision used to be a large TV and electrical supplier in Australia who's no longer in business. And he said, Steve, yeah, they want you to come and speak and they'll pay you $5,000 to do it. I said, Rob, mate, are you serious? That's what I make in a year. And he said, yep, and they want you to speak for 45 minutes. And there was a really long pause on the end of the phone and I said, is that in a row? And so from there he hooked me up with a guy named Peter Hempenstall, who was ranked inside the top 10 in the world debating championships at the time, and he was based in Brisbane as well. So he was kind of a professional speechwriter, and I sat down with him and we did half a dozen sessions, and I started nutting out my first keynote presentation. So I suppose the advice I'd give someone that wants to start is to not try and reinvent it all yourself. You need to go to somebody with a bit of expertise and cut through some of the mistakes that you might make and hope that you don't make them because you learn from someone else's experience.
Yeah. Away from the speaking, do you also run businesses as well, Steve?
And I had a business for many years with a friend of mine making custom-made speed skates and cycling shoes. And I think we ended up winning over 20 Olympic medals on our products, and we sold that business to a manufacturer in China 5 years ago now, so no longer involved in that. So these days I'm with a group of other blokes. We've got a hotel in Japan. Hotel's called Aqua Alpine, aquaalpine.com. It's in the ski fields in Hakuba in Japan.
Yeah, nice.
And we also run an online travel agency that goes with that, which is japanpowder.com. So if anyone's looking to go and ski or snowboard in the best powder in the world, look us up.
Boom. Just why I wanted to piggyback off that, we have a lot of entrepreneurs and business experts that come on. So just from you being in business in, you know, multiple different sectors, is there any little bit of advice for someone that's just starting a business or just little business tips that you might have picked up from skills from you being an athlete as well?
Well, not really an athlete one, but yeah, one that springs to mind is I've learned from mistakes a few times in writing emails, in that whenever there's anything that's slightly controversial or a topic that you're replying to on email that might have emotion involved, you should always type your email and not send it until you've slept on it.
It's actually pretty true, because sometimes when you're reading something, me and Johnny said this before, when sometimes that we speak and communicate, now we've got a rule that we have to ring each other, because sometimes when you look at a text or you look at an email, sometimes, you know, the tone of the actual meaning isn't what you actually wrote. So that's just something that we've started.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes if you're getting an emotional topic with a customer who hasn't paid or something, initially your thoughts are just to go on the attack, and if you reply straight away, it's usually not going to be the best outcome.
Well, yeah, you're always on the defensive, aren't you?
Yeah, so if you sleep on it, I've found that you generally come up with a better solution.
Yeah, you mentioned lessons learning and learning from past failures to further your evolution. Is there anything specifically recently that, you know, maybe a lesson that you've learned that you could share with us?
I
suppose right through my athletic and continuing into my life today, I've often used things called mental triggers. That's what I call them anyway, and I talk about them when I present sometimes as well. I used to have a sign on the ceiling in my bedroom when I was skating, and it said, "This is the Olympics, get up." Because I knew that my competition on the other side of the world were getting out of bed, and if I lost to those blokes, I'd have to live with that regret. I wasn't prepared to have that. And so I've continued on with that these days, and my wife won't let me stick the sign up on the roof because, you know, she's a woman and she doesn't want any paint ripped off the ceiling. But I have a sign next to my bed, and it says family first, because we've got three young kids, and often I get carried away in what I'm doing, whether it's business or, you know, I'm keen on my tennis or I want to go surfing or something, and I get a little bit of that athlete selfish mindset creeping back in. But, you know, it's funny, if you're just able to see your goals written down somewhere every day, or just something that triggers your mind to head in that direction, and it's amazing how much difference it makes. And we all need those reminders, because, you know, most people forget 95% of everything they hear within 2 weeks. So if you're not writing down the important stuff, then you're not remembering it.
Did you call those integral mental triggers?
I didn't say integral. What? I think I just said mental triggers.
Yeah. Mental triggers.
Yeah, mental triggers. So isn't Australia one of the first countries or places in the world to go to have New Year's?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
One of the first, yeah. I think it's somewhere in the South Pacific, like the Cook Islands or something.
The Kiwis.
It's just on this side of the dateline that has the first New Year's Eve celebration.
Yeah, so as you're waking up pre-Olympics when you were in your career, you have a sign on your ceiling that says, "Get up." You're literally one of the first people in the world waking up.
And, That's a good way of looking at it.
And as that race ended, you won the gold medal. I think it's all connected. You got up first. You became first place.
Hey, Steve.
It's certainly a lesson there. And, you know, those days where everybody has them, the hard days where things aren't going the way that you plan them to, I mean, then it comes back to how much you really want it. And if you're pursuing a job or a sport that your heart's not really in, then you're not going to pursue it on those hard days. So finding your passion and sticking with it and becoming an expert in one particular thing is, I mean, that's a key ingredient to being good. Just do one thing and do it well.
Yeah. Steve, how hard was it coming back when you first won to Australia? You know, you went from being an unknown to a celebrity overnight. Like, who kept you grounded?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got friends and family that around me that are prepared to smack me upside the head, as the Americans would say it, if my head starts to get a bit too big. But I don't think that's happened at all. And I remember when I flew back from the Olympics on business class, which was a brand new thing for me, that's for sure. And I was walking out of the gangway of the plane at Brisbane Airport, and at the end of the gangway, I could see a sea of cameras. People, just crazy, and I was walking up the gangway, and I thought, oh, there must be someone famous on this flight, and then I stopped for about 5 seconds, and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, it's me.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, what was...
And so I kind of had my 15 minutes of fame there, you know, and it's 15 years later, and people still recognise me on the street, and it's crazy the number of people that know where they were and what they were doing when I got the gold medal, and that little bit of inspiration that a lot of people have been able to derive from something that I did makes me feel proud to be an Aussie.
Yeah, and, you know, people talk about a legacy. You know, you're in the record books for eternity.
Forever.
Yeah, Southern Hemisphere's first winner Olympic gold medal.
Yeah, be proud, man.
What would you say your strengths are? Like, looking back on your career and what you're doing now, what is your superpower?
I wouldn't call it a superpower. I just, once I get started at something, I don't give up on it.
Would that be advice? How about the kid listening at home who is getting frustrated because every time he tries something new, he's not the best at it and he feels he wants to be, and he keeps quitting things and not sticking it out? What would you tell that kid?
I've kind of said it before. Nobody's good at anything the first time they do it. If you've been doing something for 2 weeks, it's easy to throw it away and try something new, but if you can't spit something out, then you're never going to get to an expert level at anything. And until you've gotten to a sub-elite level, is where I call it, where you're pretty good at something, you haven't quite done your 10,000 hours yet, so you're not an expert, but you're pretty good at it. It's not until you get to there where you start to uncover where the real juice is inside of something, those little things where you can improve and you attack them with 100% of your mind and your body because you love it. The average person who isn't getting to a sub-elite level at something has never uncovered any of those areas, and sometimes that means, you know, taking a bit of a calculated risk here or there along the way as well, but you know, everything's got that level of risk in it too, and if you're not prepared to give all of yourself for something, then you're not going to be an expert at something either, I don't think.
Yeah, that's some interesting points. Do you, does any of your kids also are involved in the sports at all, Steve, or do they play different sports?
Oh, they're only pretty young. They enjoy skating. I like taking them down to the skating rink for a social. But
do they know what's happened?
They're old enough to know now that my twins are 7 and the older one 9. So,
what do you do? Like, I'm not going to ask you where you store your gold medal, but is it something you leave in the bank?
You painted your house gold?
Actually, every speaking gig that I do, it comes along with me and goes through the audience. So I think it's been through about 25,000 or 30,000 hands now.
That's awesome.
Have you ever just turned up
talking for me?
Have you ever just turned up to Christmas with it on?
You'd be a bit of a wanker if you did that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know. You'll get to the stage where you just start doing stuff like that and, like, you know, dressing up like
that. If you want to drop by my house and borrow it and wear it to your family Christmas party, go for your life.
Oh, well, all right. That's an open invite.
Yeah, dude. don't put that on the table. You'll see the Vision Board podcast up in Brizzy with a bowl.
All right, we've got personality round now, Steve. We've got 4 questions that we like to ask all our guests. Johnny's got the first one.
Yeah, let's start this off. Stephen Bradbury, if 3 of your closest people who know you, your friends, were in a room sitting at a table, what are some of the things they would be saying about you?
3 of my closest friends. I'd like to think that that the word generous might get thrown around. Stubborn would most definitely get thrown around. That's all I got.
Okay, interesting. All right, we're going to take you back to your childhood now. What posters did you have on your wall growing up?
Posters?
Yeah, man.
Oh, you mean the Page 3 ones? I had a big picture of Samantha Fox on the back of my door as a kid.
Did you?
Does that count?
Did you have a Pam Anderson? I'm getting this a lot.
You had that, did you?
No, well, I had plenty of her. Her and Rocky, mate.
I had a big poster of Tom Carroll, world champion surfer. I've always been keen on my surfing.
Oh, cool.
And, Mark Ocalupo has always been one of my Aussie idols that I've looked up to. I've been lucky enough to meet him a few times too.
Yeah, nice one. We had a guy called Hayden Cox on the other day. He runs Hayden Shapes.
He was raving about Tom Carroll.
Yeah, that's his hero. And Tom does, like, because he designs surfboards for all the surfers, so Tom tests his balls for him. So it's interesting he just said that.
Yeah, did you hear the story about Tommy Carroll when he carried the Olympic torch prior to the Sydney 2000 Games?
No.
Please share.
Well, he was running with the torch, and some guy out of the crowd has just come running out and tried to steal the torch off him.
What?
And Tom Carroll didn't let it go, and him and this bloke rolled down the embankment off the side of the road, and Tommy Carroll ended up on top, and he ripped a couple of punches into his stomach. Savage. And then came back up the embankment and kept running with the torch.
Go tell me.
A little bit of ground and pound with the torch. You gotta love it.
You never let it go.
That's a good story. So this podcast, we like using it as a platform of learning and sharing knowledge. So one of our last questions is, if you were to interview one person in the world that you really look up to, who would you interview and what one question would you ask them?
I'd go back in time and I'd interview Muhammad Ali.
Oh, nice.
And I'd ask him where he got all that passion from.
Good question. All right, the next one's going to be interesting to see if you invite Muhammad. Now, Steve, you've got You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You got 5 invites. The only thing is you can't invite any of your family or friends, but it can be anyone dead or alive. Who are you going to invite?
5 people straight off the cuff. That's pretty hard.
Boom. Come on, man. You're an Olympic gold medalist.
Yeah, you rattle cries up for a living. You can get 5. Come on.
All right. Let's go with Elon Musk.
Yeah, nice.
And I don't know. Not that I'm a big fan, but I might have to get Donald Trump along as well. That'd be interesting.
Just to see what's going on. Yep.
Yeah, we'd have to get a couple of Aussie sports icons in there. Maybe Mick Doohan.
Yeah, Mick.
And what have we got? 2 more to go. We'd have to have a couple of females in there as well, wouldn't we?
Be rude not to.
We'd probably get Elle McPherson. That'd be good.
She's still good. Although she's...
Yeah.
Do you know who
I know. Yeah, of course. She's
beautiful. And let's throw in Greg Norman as well.
Oh, the shark.
Yeah, cool. So, Stephen, man, before we let you go, we appreciate your time. Could you let our listeners and your fans listening where they could continue to follow your journey?
Yeah, cheers, guys. Thanks for having me along. And if you want to check me out, go to stephenbradbury.com.
Steve, it's been a pleasure, man. You know, since I was young, you know, you've been a bit of an inspiration. So I've really appreciated the time that you spent with me and Johnny, man. So thank you for coming on.
Cheers, boys. Have a good day.
All right, brother. Be good.
And guys, that was the Olympic gold medalist, the Bradbury, Stephen Bradbury.
Doing a Bradbury, man. It's interesting to hear. I'm still not totally convinced that I'm buying that it was a fluke. You know, I brought it up in the interview, and I don't believe in flukes. We create our own opportunity. Yes, people fell, but guess what? He still had to put himself there to be standing when they fell.
Yeah, think about it. When the time came when he was ranked number one, he didn't win. He fell himself over. So it's about putting yourself in the right opportunity, which I'm sure that we'll speak a little bit more in detail on Friday.
Huge take-home point.
Definitely. So, guys, thank you for the big week. If you haven't yet, check out Ryan Blair. Friday wrap-up show, like I said, we'll go into more details about what we both think of the major takeaway points from this episode with Ryan Blair and Stephen Bradbury. But stay tuned. We've got Matt Manson and Laird Hamilton on next week. Johnny, before we go, just hit us up with the social media things.
Yeah, guys, follow me on all socials at Johnny Stofko. Check out the new website, johnnystofko.com. Go to our iTunes and SoundCloud. Subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast. Leave us a 5-star review. Share it on your Facebook. Tag Tristan Cannell in it. Tag Johnny Stofko in it. And let's continue to keep bringing it.
Definitely, guys. So like Johnny said, get involved on social media, tag us in posts, and send us quick messages on things like feedback, any guests that you want to have on. We'll always do our best to kind of do that. And we always love the interaction and chatting with all the people that follow the show and the audience.
Yeah, man. Couldn't say it better, man. Thanks, guys, for continually doing this. And Tristan, man, let's do this.
Definitely, guys. We'll see you on Friday.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching a itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.